Hey everyone, this is Achyuta Baba from Nightlight Astrology, and today we are going to continue our exploration of the nodes changing signs into Taurus and Scorpio. Today I decided, even though we very well may take a look at the nodes changing signs, there's just, I looked at the calendar and I realized there's so many things going on at that time astrologically that are probably going to take my focus away, like Venus retrograde, Venus conjoined Pluto, Saturn square Uranus, that I decided let's continue our deep dive into Taurus, the Taurus Scorpio nodal axis and the change that's happening later this month today. So that's what we're going to do. I am going to take this through the 12 signs based on your rising sign, but I'm doing it sort of differently today. What I'm doing is I have basically arranged this in terms of house dyads. So for example, we're going to look at what it might mean if you're a Scorpio or a Taurus rising, given that the nodes of the moon will fall across these two houses and create eclipses around these two houses for both signs. And then we'll go through the second and eighth houses, the third and the ninth, the fourth and the 10th, the fifth and the 11th, and the sixth and the 12th. So we're going to look at this in terms of breaking down house dyads. And I'll be doing two rising signs at a time for this. The other thing that I decided to do was, just because I've been having some fun with the tarot lately a little bit more, I also brought two cards for every house dyad in order to help us unpack the way that Scorpio and Taurus might behave across those houses in particular. So I think that'll be fun today. That's what we'll be doing. In the meantime, I want to remind you all that we have 30 days left to go in my annual Kickstarter, and we have 462 backers. Wow, thank you guys so much for your support. I really appreciate it. The link to my Kickstarter is in the description of this video. It is also in the comment section of this video. Let's see if we can get to 500 today. Yesterday we had I think it was upward of 40 backers that pitched in yesterday. So thank you so much, everybody. Remember that when you pitch in, you can pick up my Astrology of 2022 video. It's the deep dive I do into all of the astrology of 2022. You can also pick up a year ahead horoscope reading for your sun or rising sign that goes through the whole of 2022. I don't release that anywhere else. I have a bunch of talks on different subjects that you might find interesting, different exclusive lectures. Also, there are horary, there's kind of like a bundled horary deal where you can get three horary questions to ask anytime during the year ahead. And then the biggest one is obviously, if you want to study with me in 2022, my Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic course, which starts in June of 2022 and November of 2022, that class is, you can get it for 50% off or even $400 cheaper than the early bird rate. So that's a really great deal that I only run through the Kickstarter as a way of supporting this channel for the year ahead. If you want, you can also take year one and year two and bundle them together, at which point, if you bundle them, it's even cheaper. And then it goes on. If you decide you want to take year one, year two, and horary, you can bundle three of them together. And if you want to take all four, including my advanced readings and passages program, those are 4 years worth of material that you can get absolutely the cheapest if you bundle them all together, or even two or three of them together. So at any rate, I hope to see some of you in class. What do the funds go to? Well, first of all, remember that I always like to tell people to just be really transparent with what happens. The Kickstarter takes something off the top, the credit card processors take something off the top, then you have to pay taxes on it. And then in this order, then usually this is part of how I support my family. This is how I support a staff, two people that work really work like one full-time and one closest to full-time on making sure that I have this channel running smoothly. Then I have eight other staff that help me with a huge variety of things. And all of that has to be done because of the sheer volume of work that I do with client readings and with classes that I teach. So in order to be able to have time to make free content every day, I have to have a bunch of people supporting me so that my classes, my coursework, my reading schedule, that I have time and space for all of that. So it's a huge amount of work. It's not like the world's biggest enterprise or anything, but as a small business, it's a load, and this Kickstarter takes the load off so that, over 50% of our students can have need-based tuition and we don't have to have any kind of bottom line that I'm shooting for as a business owner. it helps me to take care of my staff. It helps me to do really cool things too, like our projects that we do every year. The two big ones on the table right now are building the community herbal medicine garden and then building a donation-based reading clinic that we're going to launch hopefully in 2022. If not, then for sure in 2023. But it's a slow thing because we have to build out the infrastructure. We have to get the staff. We have to put it all in place. And I have to do that while also, you know, managing everything else on the table plus this big garden project that we're doing. So it will be there though soon. And it's every year when we do the Kickstarter, it's that support that comes in from the audience that allows me to do all of that. Plus take half of my day every single day, 5 days a week, year round, to sit down, go through my meditation every morning, spend time with sacred scriptures, write a lesson plan, deliver it here to you guys, you know, and then push it out to social media everywhere. So that's the process that goes behind it. If you like this channel, there's a lot of ways you can help. You can subscribe, you can like, you can share, you can click the notification bell. You could send us prayers. We really appreciate that. We know not everyone can donate. And for those who can, you are the big reason why this channel keeps going, but also everyone else and all the little things you can do. We really appreciate it. That being said, 462 backers, see if we can get to 500. Our goal is 1,367. So we're about a third of the way there now with 30 days left. So click on the in the comment section. You can find the link to donate or in the description of this video. Thank you guys very, very much. Really appreciate it. Okay, that being said, now let's dive into talking about the nodal axis changing signs into Scorpio and Taurus. I'm going to put the real-time clock up on the screen, and we are going to go through all of the house dyads, and we'll be addressing two rising signs at a time this way and talking about the, it's really important because eclipses come in waves and they come in both signs. So you're going to get eclipses in Scorpio and in Taurus over and over and over again, like little wave systems coming in and out, which means they'll be affecting two houses at once. All right, so here you can see on the screen. And the nodes of the moon, of course, are shifting signs a little bit later in December, right around the time actually that everything is sort of completely blowing up with Venus retrograde, Saturn square Pluto. It's right around the solstice, right around the holidays. So I was like, you know what, the likelihood that this will be at the top of my list at that time is probably low. So I just better do it now. So at any rate, you can see them changing signs right around December 22nd into the 3rd. And from that point on, let's now take a look at what it means if we have these dyads across the different house axis. So you got first and seventh house. We're going to start there. So this is if you're a Taurus rising or a Scorpio rising. We're going kind of out of order today because we're going to go in order of the houses, not the signs. So if you're a Taurus rising or a Scorpio rising, this exploration will fit your birth chart. If you're using whole sign houses, of course. Now, before I dive into this, remember the other thing here that's really important is to note that these eclipses are repeating now in the spring of 2022, the fall of 2022, and then again, a little bit in the spring of 2023. So this is really for sure shaping the topics of 2022 and a little bit into 2023. And we can, you go back to the video I did yesterday to hear a little bit more about the nodes of the moon, their meaning, and unpacking them at a little deeper level philosophically. Okay, so with these dyads, I pulled two tarot cards to help us unpack. Remember that in general, this is a Venus-Mars axis, both feminine signs and both signs that also feature the interconnected relationship between the astrological lovers, Mars and Venus. So Venus is in its detriment in Scorpio, Mars is in its detriment in Taurus. Venus is in its rulership in Taurus, and Mars is in its rulership in Scorpio. The moon is exalted in Taurus and in its fall or depression in Scorpio. There is no planet exalted in Scorpio. And there is no planet that is depressed in Taurus. And ancient astrologers said, why is it? Why is it that where the moon is exalted, there no planet is depressed? And where the moon is depressed, there no planet is exalted in Scorpio and Taurus. And in Retorius, the Egyptian, he says, we say that it is because the moon is the fortune of all. And he whom fortune exalts, no one may depress. And he whom fortune depresses, no one may exalt. It's a way of saying that these signs have a lot to do with the rise and fall of fortune in the world. material circumstances, whether it's pleasure, joy, desire, satisfaction of our desire or our senses, or losses and hardships or devastation or loss materially. These two signs deeply embody those qualities in the material world, especially with our senses, sensuality, desire, money, sense of material security and belonging or trust or reliability, and what it feels like when those things are taken away or the rug's pulled out from underneath our feet. So these are also signs associated with fertility and to a certain extent, sexuality and desire. So at any rate, they play out pretty interestingly with the cards when I did this exercise today. So this is really cool. So here's what I'm going to do. We're going to start with Taurus and Scorpio, and I'm going to show you the dyad that came up and then talk about it in terms of the first and seventh house axis if you're a Scorpio rising or a Taurus rising. So the dyad that came up is the King of Pentacles and the Two of Pentacles. You can take a look at those two cards, the King of Pentacles and the Two of Pentacles. So on the one hand, you see the man standing with the ocean in the background, the waves and the ships are going up and down, and he's got like a little infinity symbol, figure eight looking thing, wrapping up two pentacles. He's standing on one leg and balancing. And then you have the king, who by contrast is looking very secure, very solid, very wealthy, and on top of it all, on top of the city, in charge, in control. It's a really interesting juxtaposition of images. And I think it's interesting to look at those in terms of the first and seventh house axis. We're talking inherently about relationships, and we're also talking inherently about identity. So how would the King of Pentacles and the Two of Pentacles play into questions about relationships and identity? Well, one way they would do so would be in terms of power, power dynamics and power differentials, especially when it comes to resources. It could be emotional resources. It could be material resources. With the Pentacles, you kind of think material resources, but I think of the Two of Pentacles juggling resources, not having a sort of limited amount of resources and maybe trying to figure out how to use them and balance different needs that exist with a limited amount of resources. It's also about knowing what to do and what to take and what to give. Again, just the use of resources and the idea that it's a bit of a balancing act that has to be pulled off. And is that something that applies to relationships? Of course, when you're in a relationship, everyone brings something different to share to the table. Everyone has different resources, skills, talents, abilities, and you're thinking about how to share them. Well, what do you do if there's also the juxtaposing image of the King of Pentacles, where all of the power resides, where the sense of, I'm someone who's like more of a CEO, or I have a lot of resources. So I also think about hoarding versus sharing. I think about who the power and who has the power and who has the resources in relationships, and how does that shape the dynamics of a relationship. So power and resources in relationships really come to mind for this dyad. And also what kind of image are we trying to project? You know, what kind of, are we trying to be dominant? Are we trying to be the one who looks like, you know, I've got it all together. I'm powerful. I'm stable. I'm in control. But the Two of Pentacles comes in and says, yeah, but it's a balancing act. And there's the need to share resources, or also to look at how different things go together. So feels like quintessential first house, seventh house stuff. All right, let's go ahead and we're going to shift now. And what we're going to do is I'm going to push Taurus and Scorpio into the second and the eighth houses. So you can see here they are across the second and the eighth house axis. So this would be if you're an Aries rising or a Libra rising. For Aries rising or a Libra rising, you'll have the eclipses falling across the second and eighth house axis. So what might that bring up? Well, let's take a look. So the dyad that came back with the cards this morning was the Five of Pentacles versus the Four of Wands. Five of Pentacles and the Four of Wands. It's another really interesting image juxtaposition that has a lot to do as well with there's two people coming together, being supported in a lovely, luxurious looking environment, and two people out in the cold looking like they're impoverished and in need of support or help, injured, and not doing so well. So one card can speak to the beginning of an alliance or a marriage, or putting things together and having a firm base. And the other one can speak to poverty, and the other one can speak to loss, and the other one can speak to being put out in the cold or being rejected or looking for support, looking for some form of mercy. So these two cards are really interesting when you consider the intense dyad of Mars, Scorpio, Taurus, Venus across the second and eighth house axis, if you're in Aries or Libra rising. The idea here being that you have signs of plenty and signs of poverty. You have signs of loss, and you have signs of like a fertile, strong, healthy support system. And so explorations around loss and explorations around either allegiance or supportiveness with money and relationships. It's funny how the first two, the first and seventh house and the second and eighth, look and feel very similarly, although less about the power dynamics that I think we're looking at with Taurus, Scorpio in the first and seventh, and a little bit more about swings in resources, going from rags to riches, going from not having much to joining with someone and having enough, or vice versa, having something with someone and being left out in the cold. I think, for example, about custody battles with this one, or divorce proceedings where people are arguing about money, or the potential for there to be swings in terms of losses and gains. And I think the thing here is, when you're in the green, don't forget the existence of the red, so to speak. And when you're in the red, know that there's probably going to be some twists and turns that and help will eventually become available. So that's the vibe I'm getting from that Four of Wands and Five of Pentacles dyad that came up for Libra and Aries rising folk. All right, let's go ahead and go on. If we move forward, I love doing this, by the way. I'm having so much fun with this, playing a little bit more with the tarot. I find it's such a really nice way of helping develop like a focal point in a meditation. So I'll use the I Ching in the same exact way. And I've just never been, I don't know, for whatever reason, I've just never used the tarot, even though I play with the tarot, you know, in my spare, not play, but you know what I mean? I bring out the tarot in my spare time, like quite regularly. So at any rate, all right, let's move on. We are now going to go to the third and ninth house axis. So if you are a Pisces rising or a Virgo rising, you're going to get the Scorpio Taurus eclipses across the third and the ninth house axis. So here's the dyad that came up for that one. I love this one. It is the Nine of Wands and the Moon. The Nine of Wands and the Moon. So you can see on the one hand, someone on the Nine of Wands, the guy looks banged up, like he's been fighting. The wands are kind of a fiery suit. So think about conflict and recovery. You think about a long, nine is almost to the end of this suit. And so you think of something that's been going on for a while, has a history behind it, that there's some wounds, there's baggage, there's been a long struggle or effort. There's, you know, battled and bruised kind of feeling, and look, taking time out for recovery and kind of looking behind your back. Is everything still okay? Like, you know, what do I have to be worried about? And then the Moon card, which to me, the Moon card is the quintessential exploration of shadows, exploration of the unconscious, maybe sometimes in dreams. Interestingly, the ninth house was called the place of dreams and omens from dreams. Dream interpretation was the ninth house. But the Moon, also a healthy exploration of what exists in the unconscious. And so our fears, and also to a certain extent, when I see the Moon as an astrologer, I always think also of the shadows that live in the family psyche. But when you think about this across the third and the ninth house axis, I really think, remember Mars, Venus across the third and the ninth, I think about mental, intellectual, spiritual, religious, political, wounds or baggage or conflict. For example, when I think about the Nine of Wands across the third and the ninth, I think about religious and spiritual conflicts in ages past, like the Crusades, or I think about the Inquisition, or I think about images of religious or spiritual persecution. I think of a debate and rhetoric team traveling around the country eviscerating people, you know, like, or also the way in which religion or spirituality has wounded us. We've been through a long journey fighting. I think about activism, like spiritual or political activism. I think about people advocating and fighting for something, but feeling beat up by it. So And I wonder if we're not looking at the shadows this year, if you're a Virgo rising or a Pisces rising. Either way, you're going to have the eclipses across the third and the ninth. If you're a Virgo or Pisces rising, then I got to think you're looking at the shadows of intellectual, spiritual, religious, political beliefs, conflicts, ideologies, and maybe there's some wounds there that can be healed. Maybe there's understanding of unconscious patterns that tend to perpetuate fights in your life based upon the strength of your convictions or the weakness of your convictions. Something like that is going on here. All right, so we'll continue now. And I'm going to go ahead and move this again so that we have Taurus and Scorpio now across the fourth and 10th house axis. And this is, of course, applicable if you are an Aquarius or a Leo rising. So if you're an Aquarius or a Leo rising, this applies to you. Eclipses across your fourth and 10th house axis. All right, let me show you the dyad that came back for this one. Seven of Wands and the Empress. Seven of Wands and the Empress. I think this is just absolutely perfect set of images for this house axis. Seven of Wands, someone's really busy fending off a lot of people that are maybe attacking or possibly just dealing with a lot of different situations. You can see he's kind of got one foot on one side of a stream or river and the other side on another. He's got two different shoes on, it almost looks like. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on here and he looks like he's trying to deal with it all. It's a lot of busy. It's a very busy, energetic card and looks like, you know, one that has to do with dealing with stress, dealing with a lot of activity. The Empress, on the other hand, is like quintessential Taurian image. If you ask me, it's, you know, that image of like just kind of beautiful, abiding goddess, fertile, sensual, you know, nature or natural energy. Feels very fecund. So at any rate, the Seven of Wands and the Empress across the 10th and the 4th. Well, the 10th is called Praxis. It's the place of action and activity out in the world. The 4th is called the resting place. And it has this feeling of abiding. So sometimes you project an image out into the world, for example, and the image that you project out into the world is, I'm just an abiding goddess. I have that fertile, lush, you know, stable, lovely feeling. But then at home on the inside, everything's chaos. You know, it's a Scorpio in the 4th. Or it can go the other way around where, you know, I'm busy, busy, busy out in the world. And at home, I need to find or create the opposite with the goddess. So I just look at the tension between the busyness and activity and conflict of the Seven of Wands and the sort of abiding, peaceful nature look, you know, natural looking goddess in her power in a field, you know. That's the Taurus Scorpio axis. If I could come up with two cards that really represent it, those would be it. And then to think that they're also falling across the axis, it has to do with the abiding or resting place versus the activity place out in the world. So those images are, you're really working with those images this year if you're an Aquarius rising or a Leo rising. Okay, so I'm going to bring up the chart again, and we're going to take a look now at Pisces. Whoops, we just did that going backward. Sorry. Now we're taking a look at the fifth and the 11th house axis. This is for people who are Capricorn or Cancer rising. We're going to see Taurus and Scorpio across the fifth and the 11th house axis. So if you're a Cancer rising or a Capricorn rising, the eclipses will fall across your fifth and 11th house axis. So let's think about this house axis now as a dyad. The two cards that I drew, I think also very fitting. The King of Swords and the Queen of Pentacles. And this makes just a ton of sense. The 11th house was traditionally called the Joy of Jupiter and the House of Allies and powerful people and benefactors. And it's associated with the 11th, with our ambitions in the world and the people and connections and resources and groups that we need to ally ourselves with in order to reach our goals. Feels very King of Swords-like to me. No nonsense, driven by ideology, driven by mind, driven by air, driven by connections that we make with other people, maybe a little aura of social conflict, a little aura of social ambition, very 11th house, you know, in meaning, as far as I can tell. And then the Queen of Pentacles, which is really interesting because the fifth house was called the Joy of Venus and the House of Good Fortune. And the Queen of Pentacles is another very fertile image. It's a very earthy image. And it's a lot like the Empress. Like if I had to compare two cards in the tarot, you know, kind of bring up sets that are like each other, the Empress and the Queen of Pentacles could go hand in hand. The Queen of Pentacles suggests, you know, mothering, children. It suggests the need for pleasure in the animal body. There's a little rabbit hopping by in the image here. You can actually see it. The Queen of Pentacles, a little rabbit in the corner. So this is about whether it's caring for a creative process in the fifth house, or if you think about the fertility of the fifth house, and you also think about the natural desire to look for pleasure, joy, happiness, any kind of emphasis on the goddess is associated traditionally with the fifth house. It is the place of creativity, of pleasure, of joy, also of a bit of romance and sensuality. And it's also associated with pregnancy and children. So the juxtaposition between these two places is also about what is more important, my creative and sensual body and its happiness, its leisure, its joy, its creativity, its spontaneity, which is very personal, or at least more interpersonal. Or am I going, you know, drifting a little bit into the King of Swords territory where I'm talking about greater social, the threads or ties or bonds that I have with people socially and how they are helping me toward my greater ambitions professionally. King of Swords is a bit more like, you know, networking with people and finding people that have common ideological instincts and similar goals. And, you know, like if I think about my Nightlight speaker series that I host every quarter, you know, making connections with colleagues, sharing interesting ideas, you know, advancing the conversation, very King of Swords in, you know, like an 11th house vibe. Remember, again, the 11th house is called the Joy of Jupiter, a place that's associated with powerful people and our ambitions and how we get together with other people to pursue them. So think about that dyad of like your personal sense of joy, happiness, creative fulfillment, sensuality, romance versus the place in the world where you might be compromising some of that in order to find the right, you know, teammates in order to succeed or progress in some path toward the realization of your hopes or wishes in the external sense out in the world. Okay, so last but not least, let's take a look. And so again, that's Cancer or Capricorn risings. Then finally, we are looking at Sagittarius and Gemini rising. If that's you, then the eclipses are falling across the sixth and 12th house axis. So Sag or Gemini rising, you get eclipses across the sixth and 12th house. Let's look at this as a dyad through the cards. So Geminis and Sagittarius, you have them in the difficult houses, but the cards are pretty interesting. You have two major arcana, the Hanged Man and the Lovers. The Hanged Man and the Lovers. Now, I think it's interesting that these houses, the sixth, 12th, as well as the third and the ninth, were called metacosmios, which means like a liminal space or like a world between worlds where the gods are there and moving things around in subtle planes that we can't necessarily see or something like that. So when I think about the Hanged Man, I think quintessential 12th house. It's a space. The Hanged Man can be that space of, let's hold it up so you can see it, can be a space of reflection, of temporarily suspending action or decisions in order to literally hang in the void and contemplate something. So a space of deliberate surrender, reflection, or feeling stuck and unable to make a choice, feeling stuck in some kind of liminal space. That comes to mind very powerfully with this card for me. Also sacrifice and surrender or being misunderstood. This is also, you know, potentially a picture of someone who is being punished for something. And so you have also the idea in the 12th house of heretics, scapegoats, outsiders. And there is some sense maybe of martyrdom even associated with this card, which strikes me also in terms of the sixth house, which was called the Joy of Mars, and Mars, the planet, was related to martyrs. So there's some kind of sacrifice, willing sacrifice, and or suspension or waiting or being in some kind of in-between space. The other card that comes up, of course, is the Lovers. And this is often a card that comes up when there's going to be dramatic shifts because you're meeting someone or there's something going on within a relationship. Obviously, it's the Lovers. At the same time, the kind of Garden of Eden motif points toward the need to make critical choices and the idea that the way something will turn out is dependent upon how it started and how choices were made at the early crossroads of a situation. So the Lovers, what will you choose? The Lovers, who are you, who literally are you with, and are they good for you or not? So when you put these two together across the sixth and the 12th house, I do think about who and what are you sacrificing for, big choices and choices that may involve personal sacrifice. There can be some losses in relationships. There can be a sense of being misunderstood or rejected in relationships with these two cards, I think. And remember, this is taking the Mars-Venus axis of Scorpio and Taurus and putting them into two really difficult houses. The best, though, I think here would be about coming to understand patterns in relationships through some kind of contemplative process, maybe a little bit of loss, maybe hard choices. Again, maybe certain kinds of sacrifice or compromise that have to be made, but ultimately being able to have a deeper understanding and maybe making a choice to let go of something or someone. At any rate, these are some of the ways that I'm seeing things for the shift of the nodes. I thought it would be really fun to bring up some cards and use them as a way of getting into the dyads of the houses. Sometimes for me, it's just what I've been realizing lately is just the need for new streams of creativity to enter into the way that I work with houses and signs and symbols. You start doing it all the time, talking about houses and signs all the time, especially in big horoscope format where you're talking about, you know, the same houses for the same rising signs all the time. It's like, you need new ways of pulling out symbolism and imagery. And I find that right now the tarot has been really nice. So I'm just gonna keep using it. I hope you guys are enjoying it. Also, when you guys hear me reading the cards, I know a lot of you out there read tarot. What else comes to your mind as I'm hitting on any of these? Please feel free to share your insights. Love to hear from you guys in the chat box. Please don't send me emails because I get flooded with them and I can't read all of them. But in the chat box, leave me, you know, what you think. Use the hashtag grabbed when it comes to sharing what you went through under the last nodal cycles. We did that yesterday. And also if you have this axis in your chart, use the hashtag grabbed and tell us stories about how you've experienced that access in your life already. We'd love to hear from you guys. All right, that's what I've got. Don't forget, we are trying to get to 500 backers today. If you have a minute and you feel like supporting this channel, click on the Kickstarter link in the comments or the description of this video. Pitch in if you can, really appreciate it. And we will see you guys tomorrow for a little exploration of the eclipse that's coming up on Saturday in Sagittarius. All right, take it easy, everyone. Bye.